Today is April 28th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. To get the full story on anything we cover in this show, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. Surprise, everyone! The Mac is the best gaming platform in the world! Psych. No, actually, it kind of sucks. But there was some good gaming news this week, and it's this week's Context Machine fodder. Stay tuned. Brad Cook will be making his first visit to the Context Machine in just a moment. Destineer Studios on Thursday said that it had obtained $12 million U.S. in funding from the Excel Group, an investment that the company will use to beef up its video game output over the next 2 to 3 years. Destineer's subsidiary Macsoft has released many ports of Windows titles, but was also responsible for preparing the Macintosh version of Close Combat: First to Fight, which was launched almost simultaneously with the Windows edition. Destineer is hoping to pursue similar projects in the future. Destineer plans to release about a dozen games over the next 12 months, with a few of them conversions from Windows to Mac. However, none of them are expected to be original efforts. Destineer founder Peter Tampt also made some comments about Bootcamp, saying it means more Mac users. Also in gaming news this week, Mac game programmer Ryan Gordon confirmed in his blog that the Army has dropped the Mac and Linux versions of its first-person shooter, America's Army, which was created in 2003 to help military recruitment. While the Army officially ended development of everything but the Windows version at least a year ago, Mr. Gordon acknowledged that he had been allowed to keep working on the Mac and Linux versions on his own time. A number of factors contributed to the axing of the Mac version of the game. Mr. Gordon did make it clear, though, that Apple's release of Bootcamp had nothing to do with his decision. Now, looking into some entertainment news, Apple Computer may be looking at getting full-length movies and other content in iPod format added to upcoming Blu-ray disc movie releases. Apple is apparently asking studios to include such iPod content in anticipation of the release of a new version of the video-capable iPod. If that's the case, Apple would have a pre-made library of movies and other content already available when new iPod models are released. Blockbuster has already committed to carrying Blu-ray discs in movie rental stores, which would add another easy access point for iPod content distribution. Many industry watchers, including yours truly, expect that Apple is planning on releasing a new iPod model with a larger screen designed for watching full-length movies. And a bit of good news for iTunes. Television execs are warming to online distribution of shows. ABC Media Network's co-chair Ann Sweeney, delivering a keynote address during this week's National Association of Broadcasters trade show in Las Vegas, told representatives from the network's affiliates, "We are convinced iTunes does not cannibalize our audience or the lucrative streams of revenue generated through traditional distribution channels any more than DVDs of our series have in the past. In fact, we see it as supportive of those channels." Ms. Sweeney said that the iTunes Music Store and the free ad-supported downloads from ABC.com are an important part of battling piracy, noting that a show such as Lost sees 25,000 illegal downloads within 10 hours of airings. There's another good one. I'm on a roll tonight, huh? Some network affiliates have expressed dismay over iTunes distribution, which they feel could damage viewership. Taking a look at some business news, last week, Portal Player announced that Apple will not be using its processor chips in upcoming iPod Nano models. Currently, iPods use the company's system-on-a-chip processors to manage music transfers from computers and to play media files. This week, Apple Computer apparently pulled its order for video-capable iPods from another vendor, Quanta. Quanta is a computer and electronics manufacturing company in China and has contracts with Apple to produce some of its portable Macs. The iPod chips handled by Portal Player will forthwith be made by Samsung. This deal is a big win for Samsung. The company already provides a substantial percentage of the NAND flash memory chips used in the iPod Nano. Apple stock, by the way, ended the week at $70.39 a share. So joining me this week for the very first time on the roundup, very glad to have him here, Brad Cook, also from the Mac Observer. Brad, welcome to the show.
Hi, good to be here. Thanks.
Let's start off. One of the most interesting stories to me this week was this thing about gaming news. So this news from Destineer, clearly it's a really big deal for a company like Destineer to get $12 million in funding. So it's a big deal for them. But just taking a step back, is this a big deal at all for the Mac game market, for the industry at large?
You know, for the industry at large, I mean, Destineer's not a huge player, you know. They're sort of small potatoes, you know, compared to companies like EA. I did talk to Peter Tamty about it and wrote a piece, and his, you know, his feeling is that basically, you know, you look at a company like EA, and they do so many sports games, so many games that are sequels, movie tie-ins, you know, all these games that are sort of like safe bets, basically. Sort of like what, you know, Hollywood gets accused of in general with, you know, remaking TV shows or remaking old movies or whatever. And so he feels like by getting, you know, $12 million in private, you know, equity funding, that gives them the flexibility, since they don't have that kind of track record to fall back on with the sports licenses or other things, to just be creative and create unique, you know, original games.
So in that sense, from a user perspective, it's probably a big deal, just in the sense that, you know, there's a player in the market who does have some significant funding. I mean, $12 million, of course, to EA is not going to be a huge deal, but it does mean that there's a company out there with some funding that can go out there and make whatever kind of game they feel like making, make stuff in-house, come up with their own ideas.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if you want to use a Hollywood analogy, it's like a smaller studio, you know, like a company like Lionsgate that, you know, their movie Crash won Best Picture, and that was kind of a big deal. I mean, they're not a major studio. I mean, and I don't mean to disrespect Destineer, Peter, or anyone's listening to this, because, you know, they're a great company, and I've known them for a few years. So it's just, you know, overall in the larger game industry, you know, they're not as well known right now. They're still, you know, working their way up. You know, Close Combat, First to Fight was kind of their big game that, you know, came out on Mac, PC, and Xbox, and I think probably put them in the minds of a lot of gamers. So I think from a sort of an overall games business perspective, I think it's great for gamers, because hopefully, you know, they'll see a lot of interesting, unique games. You know, who knows? I mean, they might put out something that's really unique, really different, and just kind of, you know, catches on and becomes a big deal, and maybe makes a company like EA sweat a little bit, which is only good because it's going to make them, you know, try harder. They can't get complacent either.
Are there any other firms, game companies, that you think might be candidates for this kind of funding that might, now that Destineer is perhaps blazed the trail in a sense, said, hey, look, we can go out and get this kind of equity funding. Could other firms say, we might be able to do that too? Are there other firms out there that you imagine might pursue a similar track?
You know, that's a good question. I offhand, I don't know. I mean, for a lot of developers, I mean, you know, often they get bought up, you know, like Bungie got bought up by Microsoft, or, you know, EA has bought up a lot of little smaller studios. It seems like a lot of them, a lot of the smaller ones, you know, they seem to want to kind of get bought out. You know, it gives the people who started the company a nice cushion. You know, they get a nice little windfall out of it and go on to bigger and better things. You know, it would have to obviously be a smaller company. I'll just throw out a name if you want one: Ambrosia Software.
And while we're naming names, we might as well name Freeverse Software as well, who's kind of
Freeverse,
in a similar category
yeah.
with Ambrosia.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Freeverse is another one, and Freeverse is doing Heroes of Might and Magic 5 this summer, which is their first, you know, I guess maybe early fall, but that it'll come out on the Mac, but that's kind of their first sort of, high visibility title on the Mac for them. So you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess it kind of depends. I think that Destineer getting this, you know, getting this money certainly, you know, if it proves to be very fruitful for them, I suppose, you know, some smaller companies may look for the same thing in an effort to be able to fund, you know, unique efforts and put out some interesting games.
All right, now Destineer, the Destineer news. If Mac gamers are sitting around saying, "What's the news for Mac gamers?" Like, the Destineer deal seems like kind of good news as far as that industry is concerned. And like you said, also at the end of the day, kind of small potatoes in its way. Another small potatoes story is this thing about America's Army, this army recruitment game that the Mac support just got dropped. The only reason I'm mentioning it, the only reason I bring it up on the show, is because it's kind of indicative of what people normally think of when they think of the Mac game market, where there was something where people said, "Oh, we'll build this thing for the Mac," and then it turns out to be too much of a pain in the butt to do, and they drop the support. Is that still the status quo as far as gaming on the Mac?
What do you mean? You mean as far as people drop not wanting to support the Mac, as
Yeah,
far as development goes?
is the story with America's Army the more common story that we should expect to see when it comes to games on the Mac?
I don't think so. You know, as Apple grows its market share, it's going to make the Mac certainly more attractive. A company like Blizzard, which has been a very big Mac supporter and has done a lot of you know, hybrid titles where the Mac and PC version are on the same disk, you know, like World of Warcraft. They're very much, you know, committed to the Mac. I know one of the issues with America's Army was the GameSpy issue. I don't know if you're familiar with what's going on with GameSpy.
I have heard about it, but you should probably talk a little bit about it for anyone that doesn't know what that is.
Okay, so basically, GameSpy is, you know, GameSpy has this technology that allows people, when you play a game online, like a lot of the first-person shooters, like America's Army, that allow you to go online and play against other people. What GameSpy does is their technology allows you to, you know, view an in-game browser. Anytime you've played one of those games and you go on the internet and you see a list of servers you can join and the types of games that they're playing and the ping of the server, which is basically, you know, how responsive it's going to be when you're playing, all that stuff, you know, that's all thanks to GameSpy and their technology, which they've licensed. You know, that they're one of the what they call middleware companies that sort of license different pieces of technology to the game developers. The Havok physics engine, for example, is another piece of middleware that's also an issue on the Mac. But GameSpy, what happened was GameSpy, from what I understand from their point of view, they were basically undercharging for their technology to the Mac game publishers. And I guess it was a little over a year ago, they basically said, "Well, we need to charge you guys basically fair market value for our technology, you know, if you want to license it for your games." And so what happened was for the Mac game publishers who are already in a position where margins are thin, sales are kind of tepid, I mean, they're not really growing the way they'd like them to, you know, they were forced to drop it. So you had a game like Star Wars Battlefront that came out last year from Aspyr. It's a fun game. It's really enjoyable, but, you know, you can only play it online through Game Ranger. You can't play GameSpy because they decided, you know, Aspyr said that it's just we can't pay that money. So now I've lost the thread of my where I was going with that. So we were talking about GameSpy. Oh, and America's Army, sorry. So America's Army uses GameSpy. I'm getting back to this now. America's Army uses GameSpy, and so I know that Ryan Gordon, who you may have heard of, who's a pretty in Mac circles is a well-known programmer. He works for Epic. He's, you know, worked on Unreal Tournament, and he's done a lot of porting work, you know, porting Windows games over to Mac and Linux. And basically, it turned out he had been doing the Mac and Linux ports of America's Army for free for about a year or so. He said on his website a little over a year ago, sometime around the GameSpy thing, they had dropped it. As far as the larger, you know, Mac gaming, I think that America's Army may be sort of a unique kind of situation.
Well, let's switch now to one of the other stories that really caught my eye this week, which was the discussion of Apple talking with studios supporting Blu-ray about preparing their films when they prepare the DVDs to have iPod-ready content on those DVDs when they ship. Do I have that right? Is Apple really trying to prepare every Blu-ray disc as it comes out to be ready to load that content onto an iPod?
That's what I've heard. You know, Apple's obviously not going to say anything about that because they never say anything officially until they're ready to. And I haven't heard anything specific out of the Blu-ray camp on that. And of course, a lot of people involved in business dealings with Apple don't want to say things because they don't want Apple to get angry at them. So I honestly am not 100% sure what's going on there. Obviously, it would make sense. I mean, in kind of, I guess, a perfect little digital world, you buy your movie and, hey, you've got a way to put it on your iPod so you don't have to buy another copy of it off iTunes. So
a version of this really makes sense, particularly from the consumer's mindset, in the sense that all content is, you use the argument, the content is digital. It should work on any player, on my computer, on my TV, whenever I buy it. But I would imagine there are some firms out there that could get upset about this kind of thing. Are there any in particular that come to mind for you where, as we, assuming that this story proceeds, and that we see more talk about Apple getting this stuff ready for iPods, are there firms that you expect to start speaking up saying, this sucks for us?
You mean movie studios?
Studios or MP3 player makers or the software backend people, Microsoft in particular, given that they're in a format war with Apple over DRM?
Well, you know, Microsoft is in the HD DVD camp, is lined up with HD DVDs. I don't think Microsoft really would care unless it was an HD DVD issue, because that's where they've thrown their weight, and we don't know where this format war is going to end up. As far as movie studios go, I'd imagine that their attitude all around is, you know, I mean, they're all freaked out that what happened to music is going to happen to them, and that, you know, people are going to be downloading, you know, full-length, high-quality copies of movies, you know, through file-sharing networks and totally, you know, bypass DVD, and that's been such a cash cow for them that they're all freaked out over it. So I'd imagine that, you know, if it's going to happen, that they make sure that it's controlled, that there's no way to hack it or, you know, figure out some way to put that iPod-ready file, which is going to be a lot smaller than the movie file on the Blu-ray disc, you know, to put it online and share it and that sort of thing. So,
and one would imagine that the studios would be interested in working with Apple, given Apple's track record, at least so far, creating a reasonably secure system with its iTunes Music Store in terms of music.
Yeah, I think the record labels sound like they're kind of frustrated that they're basically dealing with Apple over this stuff, and you know, they want to, you know, supposedly change the pricing, and they can't do it to make it more variable if they want. So I'm sure the film studios obviously don't want to have all their eggs in one basket, so to speak, by dealing only with Apple. But you know, that's where everything is right now. I mean, the iPod is dominant and does not show any sign of letting up that dominance yet. And I mean, it's funny, there were portable video players before the iPod added that capability, and along comes the iPod, and people acted as if this is a brand new thing. But that's just the position Apple's in. I mean, they can do that, and then people, you know, go crazy. So, obviously, the studios want to, you know, I'm sure they'd love to probably sell a copy of their movie on Blu-ray, you know, put Spider-Man 3 on Blu-ray, and Sony, I'm sure, would love to jack up the price by a couple bucks by throwing an iPod version on there. I mean, already you're seeing movies, you know, like the UMD discs on PlayStation Portable, They're doing package deals where you buy the DVD and the UMD version in one package, you know. So I'm sure they'd love to throw in the iPod capable, you know, version on Blu-ray disc for people as well and charge a couple more dollars for it.
And I guess the one addendum that I would add to all of that is the fact that Apple presumably would be happy to have DVDs shipping in a with iPod-ready content in a format that pretty much only the iPod can use, help solidify their place in the market.
Oh yeah, of course. It's it's great for them, and you know, and they don't have to deal with the distribution. You know, they're gonna get I assume they're gonna get some sort of payment off every copy that's sold, and they don't have to worry about, you know, getting it out there. I mean, they don't have to deal with because obviously, you know, the thing with them selling movies off the iTunes Music Store is just gonna be obviously a huge infrastructure upgrade. And I guess, you know, maybe they'll still do that anyway, but that's going to be a large amount of infrastructure to add in, you know, to support the ability to download a full-length movie. So, you know, if they could shoot full-length iPod-ready movies and not have to worry about that, then hey, I'm sure they're happy.
And with that happy note for Apple shareholders, I think we'll call it an interview. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, sure. No problem.
Cheers. Hey, last week I got a request. I'm working on making it happen, trying to get someone to show up on the Context Machine. Not going to tell you who it is. We're going to see if we can get him show up. But it was really fun to get that from one of you guys. Hey, keep sending them in. I'd love to hear if you have ideas for someone that you'd like to hear from, types of people that you're curious to get their opinions on stuff, anything you want to hear about, let me know about it. Send me an email. The email is roundup@macobserver.com. And we'll close out with a quick product roundup. Belite Software on Wednesday released version 2.0 of its freeware utility Image Tricks, enabling users to take advantage of the effects built into Tiger Core Image, which is part of macOS version 10.4. It offers 40 core image effects and filters, 11 image generators, 30 unique masks, iPhoto integration, and the ability to export to various file formats. There's also a $10 pro version of Image Tricks that includes 6 additional image generators. Kodak has released new Bluetooth and Wi-Fi enabled EasyShare digital cameras, as well as version 6.0 of its EasyShare software. The new Bluetooth camera, called the V610, will ship next month for $450 US. The new Wi-Fi enabled camera, the EasyShare 16MP, will ship this summer for $300. The optional Wi-Fi card costs $99. DreamQuest Software has released macOS 10 versions of its Championship Hearts Pro and Championship Spades Pro card games. Both titles are identical to their Windows counterparts and cost $20. Onset Computer Corp on Tuesday introduced Hobo WaterTemp Pro version 2, a new water temperature data logger that costs $110. Orbicule on Monday released Theft Sensor, a utility that enables MacBook Pro owners to use their Apple remotes to activate an alarm that sounds if the laptop's lid is closed or if it's moved or lifted. The user activates and disables the alarm by pressing the Apple remote's play or pause button. Theft Sensor is currently in beta. Orbicule did not say when the beta will expire, nor did it note when the final version would ship. Final pricing and system requirements were not disclosed. Apple made it into the product roundup this week, too. On Monday, it debuted a 17-inch version of the Intel-based MacBook Pro laptop. The computer costs $2,800. And Misha Sakalaropoulou reviewed the Home Dock Deluxe, the latest in iPod docking technology. And finally this week, the Podcast and Portable Media Expo is getting organized for the fall. If you're curious about it, the link, as always, is in the show notes at macobserver.com/roundup. And that's the news, pumpkins. Thanks for listening to the Weekly Roundup. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by the good people at Cashfly. The bass is by The Good Boom. Stay subscribed, and until next week, we'll see you online.